Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It is Thursday, September the 16th. Welcome to the show. And as always, I want to make sure that I thank the patrons, the supporters of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast if you're interested in supporting or learning more. Let's give a shout out to Sylvie and James, Valerie, John, Brooke, Jason, Colette, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Michael, Victoria, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. I very much appreciate it. It is it's Thursday again, so for the first 189 or something like that episodes of the podcast, it always aired on Wednesday. I think I talked about this last week, but I'm coaching a girls soccer team now. So, those practices are on Tuesday night. So a lot of times, I'm just wiped at the end of that. And so, to get all the audio in and, do whatever sort of post-production editing I need to do, or just basically get the file ready to send to the publisher to then get put on, to your listening devices, it's just a lot on a Tuesday night. So for the foreseeable future, it's probably going to be on Thursdays, unless I run an interview and I record the open before I do that actual interview. So I'm actually running an interview this Friday, and then I think I'm running another one next Wednesday or something like that. So you've got a couple interviews that are going to be coming up here soon. One of them is a repeat, which is kind of cool, and then a new recovery story. So something to look forward to. Coaching girls soccer. I don't know why it is so darn challenging, but these girls just intimidate the hell out of me. But there's eight of them, and they are ages 7 and 8, and or 6, 7, and 8, I think. I'm in the midst of trying to learn like soccer drills because I've never been a soccer fan. So if I was coaching a baseball team or a football team or even a basketball team, I'd be able to give some pretty good insight, especially for baseball. But in this case, I got nothing. So I was watching some YouTube videos earlier this morning about drills for teams and that are that young, and I've got some ones to be able to pick up. We played our first game this past Saturday. I was very pleased with the effort from the girls. And then we worked on some things at practice as I record this last night. And then we've got our second game coming up this Saturday. So pretty pumped. So this week I posted on the TMS-the Mind-Body Syndrome group anything you'd be interested in hearing talked about in the podcast this week. And I got a few responses. And one of them actually I have a lot of interest in. Is it the first one? Yeah, so it's the first one. And it's from Maureen. And so Maureen said, Maureen, how to let go of the need to control outcomes. This has come up in my journaling, and I realize it is a big issue for me, which causes stress and leads to symptoms. Thank you. So what this brings to mind for me is Michael Galinsky's film, All the Rage. He had a poet called Prince A. So Prince and then space E-A. And you can actually find him on YouTube. He's a poet. He's a rapper. He's a public speaker. But he had this really great, and I wish that I had the clip handy, but he gave this really great short monologue on people spending so much time trying to control everything around them instead of trying to control themselves. And he went on to say that it would be much easier to deal with the world if we focused on just trying to control ourselves instead of trying to control the outside world. And so that's one way of looking at it. Another way is a lot of times when I get really worked up over the outcome of something or the way to which things are going, my wife always reminds me that really I'm projecting that frustration, that anger about something because there's something within myself. So it all really comes from you. In fact, all improvement really comes from you. There are very few situations. There's certainly exceptions to the rule, to this rule, but there are very few things that you will be able to improve 100% entirely external. And what I mean by that is like if somebody's sitting there next to you and they're punching you in the face repeatedly, getting rid of the person is really the answer to the problem. But in most situations, in most cases, and the things that we really strain over a lot, all those things are something internally. And a lot of it is our interpretation of a particular issue. And again, there are definitely exceptions to this rule: assault, sexual assault, violence, emotional abuse, sexual abuse. So like there's obviously exceptions to this, but I'd say for a lot of people, these internal strifes and internal stress and the things that really keep us up at night and thinking about things over and over and over are situations that are happening internally. And a lot of times what we do is try to find external things to fix that. And for some people, again, this is like back pain or neck pain. But for other people, it's drinking a lot, or it's doing a lot of drugs, or it's being overly angry, outward anger. Sometimes people say, and this came up, and so Dr. Sarno in the early, it was either the early or the mid 90s, released a VHS tape that was supposed to be like a clone of his lectures. And I don't know if you can find these on YouTube still. They were up there and then they got deleted or something like that. One of the attendees, and they were all actors, but one of the attendees had said, "I'm angry all the time. I'm always yelling. So, you know, why? How does this apply to me?" And Sarno would just reiterated that that's all external anger. That's not the things that are causing your pain, because they're all things that are going on the inside. They're things that you are repressing. And some people think that the opposite of repression is expression, meaning I kick my dog or yell at my kids or whatever, and that's getting the anger out. But it's really experience. So it's being able to experience anger. So the opposite of a repression is an experience. And so if you're sad about something, or you're upset about something, you're angry about something, or whatever the case may be, you have grief over something. And it doesn't even have to be grief over a person. It could be grief over your former life. Maybe things have gone bad over the last year. I refer a lot to pre-pandemic life, right? I'm kind of grieving that life at this moment, but it'll come back. And that's just the way that it is. And I think maybe that's a big reason why this whole pandemic has, I've been fortunate to where I haven't lost anybody. I've had a few people that I am friends with that have gotten sick, but nobody has passed away. I haven't lost anybody. And I lost a lot, you know, personally, just in terms of my entire work life has shifted. I used to be in the field all the time making personal relationships, and that was how I did my business day to day. I've been sitting in my garage now for a year and a half. We only recently got school back in the last week in person. Outside of that, it was all remote. We don't have after school care because we kind of want to see how everything shakes out. So like there's been a lot of these changes to life, but ultimately I know it's something that's going to get better. And that sort of patience is something that I just wouldn't have had a few years ago. And so maybe that's getting older. Maybe that's just having a little bit more patience in general, but it'll all work out, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Whitney said, and this is not my wheelhouse, Whitney, withdrawing from pain meds or antidepressants, how fear fuels the experience to be worse, and how you can minimize the effects through mind-body work. So the only thing that I think I can sort of speak of is being able to minimize those effects through mind-body work. And I think a lot of it comes to an expectation. To me, it's almost in the same way that like you can take, if you're having pain, you can take an anti-inflammatory, even if you don't have inflammation, and you'll see a relief of symptoms. You have an expectation of those symptoms minimizing or diminishing, right? So the neuroplastic pain and the feedback loop that's going on in your brain and your nervous system over and over and over, you might have a little bit of a temporary lapse in there, and that's where the pain would go away for a short amount of time. So to me, you can almost take this exact same approach to you're experiencing you said how fear fuels the experience to be worse. So again, you stop taking these things, you have a fear that you're going to feel worse, and because of that expectation, you actually do feel worse. So I think there's a couple different approaches you can take. You can try to block that out and not expect that, which I think is I think it's way too difficult to do something like that. But on the flip side, an alternative can be just sort of saying to yourself a level of indifference, whatever happens, happens, whatever comes, comes, and I'll just deal with it. And I think that sort of indifference or that sort of tolerance can lead to the exact same outcome that you're talking about here, or that you would be wanting to have. Colette, getting triggered by siblings. I have an overbearing one doing my head in at the moment. So it's similar to my response of question one. So again, being able to not try to control everything around you, but rather control yourself and just having an indifference to that. So I guess it's a combination of number one and two. But getting triggered in general, what is the root of that triggering? Why is that thing triggering? Because if you can identify that you're being triggered, that's a massive leap forward. A lot of people just have this reaction, right? Like something happens, they react to it, whether it's a visceral response, or even more so, they get very angry, or they post on social media about how pissed they are, or whatever the case is, right? Like that's being triggered. But if I can identify that this thing has triggered me and that's why I'm acting this way, that's one step. If you can take it the further step and say, why is that thing that I know is triggering me, triggering me? What is it about me that is causing that to be triggered? So in this case, if we're talking about a sibling, there could have been an instance or an argument or something that keeps coming up for you, maybe even unconsciously, that happened 20 years ago, right? And maybe it's always there. So being able to just to examine those sorts of things is really going to be the secret sauce there. And then Preetha, caregivers and spouses of those with TMS, how can they best support their loved ones with TMS, do's and don'ts? You know, taking the page out of Dr. Hanscom's book, and this may sound a little harsh, but I think that one of the best things that he has written about in his two or three books, maybe now, even at least two editions of one book and then a first edition of the next book, and one of the requirements that he has upon people, say that you go in and you see Dr. Hanscom, if he was practicing anymore, and you said, I have disc herniations, I have all this pain, da-da-da-da-da. One of the requirements that he would have for you to even work with him in the first place is that the family has to come in. And they have to be, and we're going to do a podcast eventually about family dynamics and family relationships, but the family has to come in and they have to agree to not talk about or ask about that person's pain again, especially in the first, I think he has 12 weeks as a requirement of that. So they can't talk about the pain. So I think that honestly, talking to a caregiver or a spouse, if you have, if you've identified in yourself that you have TMS or you have symptoms or whatever the case is, if you can tell that spouse, and it's a big step, but this was something I told my wife very early on, like, don't ask about my pain. You know, all that's, you know, that how every year for the, every day for the last 20 years, you've asked me how my back feels. We're done with that language. I think that's the absolute biggest one, because it can't just be walking around on eggshells around the person. But I also think that part of it has to involve sort of a level of, what's the word I'm looking for? Unfilteredness, if that's a word. And as an example, I've told the story in the podcast before that I think it was towards the end of last year, towards the end of 2020, I was experiencing very COVID-like symptoms. And I'm kind of having a little bit of a freak out about it. My wife, this has gone on for 2 or 3 days, and my wife had said, what if this is just the same as like the back pain stuff, the Sarno stuff or whatever? And I would have been super offended by that if that was a few years earlier. Oh, this is COVID, or I'm super sick and you have no empathy for me and all that kind of stuff. But instead, she made that comment. I was like, huh, maybe she's right. And I shit you not, an hour or two later, no symptoms. So it's something that if you and your spouse have or you and your caregiver have really like an open relationship where you can say those kinds of things or make those kind of requirements and then not unleash fury upon them if they actually do it, I think that that kind of a exchange is really a wonderful asset to have with your significant other. So I hope that is helpful, Preetha. Thanks everybody for tuning in. As always, it's a 15-minute episode, so short in nature, short in stature, but hopefully not short in value. I'll be back next week with a fresh interview as we roll towards episode 200, which is going to be coming out next month. So appreciate all of your time. Thanks so much, and have a great rest of your week.